With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the Curzon Cinemas podcast. This week we'll be talking about Edgar Wright's latest film, Baby Driver. I'm Sam Howlett, and joining me in the getaway car this week, we have Helen Seymour.
Hello.
Harry Chapman.
Hello.
And Jake Cunningham.
Hello.
So we'll be discussing Baby Driver as well as the new Netflix film, Okja. So it's a double film week today, so lots to cram into a short amount of time. But before we get into any of that, so Baby Driver gets its title from the song by Simon and Garfunkel. So our pitch for this week, pitch to me a film whose title is another Simon and Garfunkel film. Let's start with Harry.
Okay, so I was going to go for The Only Living Boy in New York, but that film's already been made and is coming out later in the year. So, so I haven't got an answer.
Okay.
So I'm done. Not really. No. Of course I've got an answer. So I've gone for the song Old Friends. And the reason I've gone for this is I want to do a film based on the political lives of Ken Clark, the Tory MP, and Dennis Skinner, the Labour MP, who seem like they're nemesis, but really they're old friends. And, see, I've got... Don't worry, I picked the lyrics out. Waiting for the sun. The sun is a newspaper. They're waiting for the headlines. Old friends, because they're old friends. Can you imagine us years from today... because they're old already, so we can see progression in their ages. Sharing a park bench quietly, because they're both very outspoken. How terribly strange to be 70, because they are about that age. And they're old friends, and the whole point is, it would be very funny if they were friends, but very different politically. And, that's it.
Very good.
Thank you.
Like it.
Yeah.
The host always goes last on the pitches.
Okay.
I'm going to go next.
Oh.
See what I did there.
Sorry, where's the rule book gone?
It's out the window,
it's
Harry.
It's out the window.
I'm going to go for Scarborough Fair. Because I've been to Scarborough, and no offence to anyone that lives in Scarborough, but it's quite a dull town.
What? I went there when I was 11 and had a lovely... Oh, yeah.
So I'm going to have a really, really, really dark, gritty murder mystery set in Scarborough at the Scarborough Fair.
In Scarborough.
Exactly. So, Detective Simon. So he retires to Scarborough to settle down, but he uncovers some weird, twisted stuff in the seedy underbelly of Scarborough Fair. And I can't even go into detail what stuff he uncovers, but it's disgusting.
It's a good job there's not a, you know, an Edgar Wright film that's similar to this, which has a Simon as a policeman. This
is not funny at all.
Okay.
Can the villain... be Uncle Garth. So it's like Garth Uncle.
I'll
tell you what.
If you have an uncle called Chris, you call him, hi, Chris Uncle.
I'll tell you what. If you explain it, it's great.
Yeah.
That's what I really like. I like to watch films and then come out and then have a little note saying.
Be quiet, Harry friend.
Harry colleague.
Harry workplace associate.
Harry assistant.
Yeah. Helen, you're up.
I am a rock, and it's dispersed.
Yeah, but what's your pitch?
Thanks, Dad.
It's just about this guy that's
his
sitting
name's here. Sam.
Sam,
oh,
Dad.
Sorry. Whoa, there. Some interrupting going on there. It's about this guy that's just sitting about all the time, and everyone's like, come on, come on, you need to do something with your life. And every time he just shrugs and goes, I don't, I'm a rock.
Jake, awesome. Your pitch.
Sorry, is he really a
is
rock?
Is this a prequel to School of Rock?
No, it's, no. It's a prequel it's a prequel to The Rock, isn't it?
No.
Does How it start Jack Black the, become a rock? Does
it, no, Jack Black was a rock and then becomes...
It's like Silence. It's a very deep meditative film.
Okay.
Oh, I thought you just meant, the state of silence.
Yeah, I can see it.
It might be a short film.
Yeah.
But a film nonetheless.
Oh, what's the... Oh, the rule book's out the window, so we can't look up the rules on whether we can pitch short film. So we'll never know.
We'll never know.
I think we should accept it.
Thank you.
Jake, your pitch, sir.
Yeah, I'm going... I've betrayed Art Garfunkel already because I got my idea and then I realised it's just a Paul Simon song.
You've already lost then.
So you have won the point.
Yeah,
there we go.
But how do we feel about a gender-swapped Shakespeare set inside a school? Me and Julio down by the schoolyard.
Is that like Julio? I don't know how I feel about that.
Yeah.
I think it's quite strong.
I think it's strong.
Mm. Oh, are detail? We? Sorry, are we using the term?
Yeah.
Strong?
So let's link. Like it's.
Yes.
So you know how? Which is the? She's the man. So that is.
That's the Twelfth Night.
Exactly. Mm. So, but that's like a classic teen comedy as well.
Okay.
So we're going for the teen comedy high school thing, but we're going to reverse the gender roles across all of it. So Juliet becomes Julio.
The problem is that works for Twelfth Night because Shakespeare wrote it that it had people dressing up as different genders.
Yeah, but this doesn't have anyone dressing up as different genders.
It's just
a reversal, completely. But I don't know. Maybe it'd be like Romy, Romy and Julio, just collide the kind of high school films and add in some Shakespeare, and it'll like Ian McKellen with his new Shakespeare app. He'd be pretty happy because it would be getting the kids some Shakespeare, like tricking them into it.
Kids, Shakespeare's cool.
Exactly. That can be one of the lines in it. And like we could get meta with it and that they're learning Romeo and Juliet.
Alright, let's go for a vote. So what do we think?
I like I Am a Rock.
I like the Scarborough one.
I like your one, Harry.
Oh no.
Oh. Jake, Helen, you get the deciding vote.
Me.
You vote for yourself?
Yeah.
Oh, well played. Well played.
That's like what Keira Knightley does in Pirates of the Caribbean 3, isn't it? Did she vote for herself? And then she becomes the pirate queen?
Yeah.
Something like that happens?
Yeah, I mean, it's the best Pirates of the Caribbean film, so I would remember that happening.
That's a weird reference.
Should we just talk about Pirates of the Caribbean?
Yeah. So it's pretty much straight after Dead Man's Chest, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, so... Let's go on to what we're actually here for. Baby Driver. It's Edgar Wright's latest film. His first since The World's End?
Yes.
So it's been quite a big gap.
Yeah, I mean, it was weird that he did a Pirates of the Caribbean film.
So it's been a good few years since he's made a film, so it's very exciting to have his name back on our screens. So Baby Driver is quite a simple plot. It's quite a familiar plot as well. Ansel Elgort plays Baby, who is a getaway driver for Kevin Spacey's Doc, a sinister criminal, and he suffers from tinnitus after a car accident at a young age and is constantly listening to his iPod. And that's pretty much the gist of the film. Lots of car chases. There's a romance in there as well. Great cast. So what do we think overall?
I really like this film a lot. This is the second time that I've watched it. And it was better for me this time around, actually.
Okay.
I don't think it's perfect. And I know there are a lot of reviews out there saying this is a flat-out masterpiece, which I don't think is true.
Mm.
And there are some flaws in it, I think, in the pacing. And I think with a film that's so reliant on genre familiarity and story familiarity, it doesn't take a lot of... chances with the narrative.
No.
And I think that's maybe, but that's fine because it's that gateway of genre that allows us the wonderful form of it. It's the craft and it's the filmmaking that is the centerpiece of it, rather than anything else. I think that's what I found most enjoyable. You're kind of like, at every second you're looking around the screen at all the amount of detail that's gone into it, the amount of effort. It is completely meticulous filmmaking. The nightmare that the producers would have had with Edgar Wright telling them what his ideas were, and then just having to think, oh, how are we going to do this? But then they've done it, and that there is some stuff in there that is kind of beyond belief in terms of effort.
But like anything like that, that must be incredibly complicated and must take so much time, it seems incredibly simple. Like, everything is so smooth about it that you look at it and it looks like it's no effort whatsoever. And yet, it must have just taken, like, months and months and months to sort out. Like, even sort of the simplest scene must have taken ages.
Yeah, I mean, this is... People have called this kind of a jukebox musical car chase, which is a really nice way of putting it, and comparing it to the most recent big musical, La La Land. La La Land is very obvious in its effort. Like, you look at the opening numbers and it's not shying away from how clever it is and how much work has gone into it. But this film is full of lovely detail that is more rewarding. And again, coming from second time viewer, being able to put the story to one side and like sink into it a bit more, got a lot more from it.
I'm sure there's so much that I missed in terms of those details, which is always such a joy, because then next time around, and I definitely want to watch it again because I loved it. I am so looking forward to all those little bits that I didn't get the first time round, and I'm sure third, fourth, fifth time there's going to be little jokes, and that's what I love so much.
I think that's something that comes with all of Edgar Wright's films, is that kind of rewatchability and that way of finding something new from it each time. The throwaway things that you don't even notice the throwaway whatsoever, and then it's kind of like five watches down the line, you're like, I can't wait for that bit, just for that half second joke or something. And this isn't out and out parody like what we're used to him doing, like a loving parody.
Really going for a genre and playing around with that genre, which he does hear a lot, but not quite as much. I was quite glad there weren't... I mean, there is one cameo in the film with Walter Hill.
Oh, really?
He plays the sort of the court interpreter at the end.
I didn't notice that.
But it's not like it's littered with cameos or loads of references like his other films are.
Yeah.
This was very much... It wants to be its own thing. You know, it's closed off in its own world, which is nice to see.
Yeah, I think it's like it's bouncing references and stuff around, but not in the same way.
Not in an explicit way,
But there's so much joy in it, that's the thing. Like, I've watched Hot Fuzz about 9 times, and I will continue to watch it throughout my life.
I mean, ITV2 is not going to stop anytime soon.
That is the reason why I started to watch it so often.
ITV2, sponsored by Hot Fuzz.
But I love it. It's such a good film. And I think the danger with us, like, sitting around a table sort of analysing it, which is great, and it's meaty, there's loads to analyse, is that, like, we need to remember this, that this pure sense of fun and enjoyment, and just, like, I was sitting there smiling so much in this film. And the thing with Edgar Wright is, you know how much he loves filmmaking, and anyone that's a fan of his, you can see this is his film, and it's such a joy.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are going to compare this to Drive, and it does have the almost an exact same storyline to Drive, in that it's the getaway driver who's looking, very quiet getaway driver, looking to get out of this life of crime, falls in love with a woman, and it's harder than he thinks to get away from his criminal life. However, this doesn't have any of the sort of art house pretension that Drive has, the existentialism of Drive. This is like Helen says, this is pure fun. This is a joyride, essentially.
But, I mean, what's so great about that is you get that from the first shot, where it's very similar to Drive. Sort of expecting that you got 5 minutes speech, and instead he starts dancing and mouthing along to his iPod. Like, from that moment, you know what this is going to be and what it's going to be is fantastic.
Because I was slightly, not concerned, but I was thinking, when I first saw the trailer for this, I did think, this does look like Drive. This does look exactly the same as Drive. But like you said, from the first shot, the first scene, you think, okay, no, we're in a complete different territory.
Yeah.
It's way more fun. I think the trailer doesn't show that at all. I'd advise not watching the trailer for a few reasons. But I think, I think it's just so much more fun. And he's actually an incredibly like good mover. And I know that sounds weird, but it's almost like loads of what you know, sort of Baby does is like moving to music all the time.
Yeah.
And like he's so like graceful and so elegant in pretty much all his movements. And whether that's, you know, a scene where he's in his apartment dancing, or whether that's the opening scene, he's doing silly things, or walking along with coffee, or whatever. I mean,
the opening scene sets you up for the whole film.
Yeah,
it's like it's almost its own self-contained thing.
Mm.
Like this first getaway, and you've got the like this pan down the bank building, and you just see this red like wheel hub with red brakes turn up, and you think, oh, it's cool, and then the Bell Bottom starts playing.
Mm.
He's like, oh, this is pretty wicked. This is fun, and I like this a lot. But then it's softened straight away when he starts singing along to it, and you realize
tapping along and yeah.
But he's what we don't see in the trailers, and we don't see in the posters. Is he's quite goofy.
He's so like, goofy.
He's like goofy and a bit silly, and that's the non-Drive stuff.
He's not just quiet cool guy.
Yeah, and that's always been the driver is the cool dude. And he is cool, and there's no way of denying that. Like there's some scenes, there's one involving sunglasses and John Bernthal, which is amazing. But it's that you actually feel like, oh, he's a real person.
Yeah.
Which Ryan Gosling is not.
Yeah.
So is all the music in the film non-diegetic, like, or diegetic?
There is like a few bits of just music that we don't know its source.
Okay, but by and large, I think all the music is within the world of the film.
Yeah, it's in the iPod.
Yeah, the soundtrack. This is where I think Helen's point's really interesting about not taking it too seriously and probably not overanalyzing it too much, because the soundtrack is so fun.
Mm.
The soundtrack from like track one, and they even have throwaway lines about it in the film, which I'm not going to spoil some of the lines from it, but in terms of it's so fun and so eclectic, and I think there's a real like love and energy, and clearly Edgar Wright has chosen every single song for the exact moment at the right time, and some of the original music in terms of that Baby makes is great fun as well.
That's not something that we have seen. It's that DJ Baby's a musician himself.
Yeah, and that makes him goofier as well.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, he's like, in some ways you think if he wasn't in the life of crime, he'd just be sort of a loser kid that is making sort of tapes in his room. I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean he's incredibly ordinary apart from when he's in the car.
Yeah. Mm. So there's a Edgar Wright directed music video from 2002. So the song is Blue Song by a band called Mint Royale. And in the music video, Noel Fielding plays a getaway driver who listens to the song while waiting for the bank robbery to take place.
Oh, really?
Wow. I think I've seen that.
Yeah, I think it's Julian Barrett as one of the bank robbers.
Because there is extra on Shaun of the Dead.
Okay.
Or maybe Hot Fuzz.
So clearly he's had this...
I haven't seen that on ITV2.
There's a bit in it as well.
There's a bit in the film where...
Of that film.
Sorry, what?
There's a bit where he's flicking through TV.
Right.
And the Noel Fielding film is in Baby Driver.
The music video.
I didn't notice that.
Yeah. Oh. He's like, he says something like, oh, why are we here?
Yeah. It's just, I didn't know it's Noel Fielding. Like,
that's the film.
Yeah, I think it's Julian Barrett sat next to him.
Yeah.
I think.
Oh, very cool.
So, in this music video, Noel Fielding says to the robbers, like, right, you've got 2:49 to get back, like, by the song finishes. And while he's in the car, he's tapping along, he's singing along.
He's great. It's so good.
So clearly the Edgar Wright's had this idea for a very long time.
I saw him message, I think it was today, someone asked him on Twitter how long it's taken. And he said he came up with the idea 6 years ago, and it's taken him 2 years since then to actually get it to get it anywhere. He just sat on the script for like 4 years, just trying to get it made. Long process, isn't it?
There's so much stuff that is had to be done in reverse to how it would maybe be normally done. So I remember with Reservoir Dogs, Quentin Tarantino saying like he did the stuck in the middle with you scene, and kind of going in and saying, we need, like, here are the six songs I want, and took them.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
To his producer, and the producer went out to get the songs, came back, said, I couldn't get you any of the songs. I could get you this song. But Edgar, and so that's the song that they used.
Yeah.
But Edgar Wright has basically written a script to the songs, which is the crazy thing.
Good job they got Baby Driver, otherwise that would have been awkward, wouldn't it?
I can't imagine the amount of money that's been spent on music licensing here.
Yeah.
Because the soundtrack's like over 30 songs long.
But this film is such a love letter to music, and like it's almost an extra character in the film, I think.
And it doesn't go for big hits all the time.
No, that's not, what I was.
They're songs you haven't heard of often. I think for Mean Streets, Scorsese spent over half the budget on a Rolling Stones song.
That was the first time he was Gimme Shelter.
It might have been, yeah. So I think, like Scorsese, like music is so important to Edgar Wright, that the specific track. And in the film, there's a great bit where the gunfire syncs with the song that's playing.
Yeah.
And we were saying earlier that must have taken so long to plan that, get it exactly right.
Well, it's like choreographing. It's like you're having to choreograph like a dance, but with bullets and sound, and like it just must take ages.
Well, I think like this has done really well recently in John Wick. And,
I was going to bring up John Wick. Yeah,
but John Wick is pretty straight edged.
Mm.
Like it does have fun, but like the music has its context.
Yeah,
with the situations that he's in. Whereas here we get a lot of contrapuntal sounds as well, where Baby is listening to something like Barry White, and the situation is really one that in any other film would not call for Barry White as well, but he manages to use that to his advantage, and it makes it more unsettling and more intense.
I love how much the music annoys almost every other character as well. and that's a really interesting thing. So Lily James is the only one that seems to genuinely care about the music, and everyone else seems to absolutely hate it or just ignore it, and I think that's a really, that's a sort of extra layer to the film, I guess.
Right, should we quickly break down the cast? So we got Ansel Elgort as Baby, John Hamm as Buddy, Elsa Gonzalez as Darling, Lily James as Deborah, Kevin Spacey as Doc, Jamie Foxx, of course, as Bats. How do you think they all fared?
10 out of 10.
10 out of 10?
All of them?
Yes.
Yeah. Mm.
Yeah.
I have reservations about one in particular.
I think for me the best cast member was Lily James, and I could have done with more of her.
I could have done with more Lily James. Chat about it.
Yeah, I think you're going to have issues with Spacey.
No.
I was going to say Spacey.
I thought Spacey was very good. I mean, I'm currently towards the end of a big House of Cards binge, so having him use his normal voice was distracting at first, because in House of Cards he has this.
Yeah.
Very thick South Dakota accent. South Carolina.
John Hamm.
Hamm's good. Amazing.
Hamm's perfect. I like Hamm.
I like Hamm.
So why do you like Fox?
I felt he was... I thought he was in it too much. I thought he was a very one-dimensional character that did things that didn't...
He's the crazy guy. and that's
yeah,
that's
it was
him.
Just that, but he just did things that didn't seem to have any reason for him to do them.
Yeah, I agree, and also then didn't do stuff when you expect him to do stuff at other points.
But not in a nice, surprising way, just in a kind of annoying way. And it was just a bit of a uninteresting... Because he's kind of set up as the kind of antagonist, I guess, in a way, for the first part of the film.
But I think that's intentional, and then that pays off later on.
It does pay off, but I just didn't find him... I didn't find him funny. I didn't find him scary, which I think you're supposed to do.
I think he was a bit scary.
He was just a crazy guy, and I wasn't... Because the rest of the cast is so good. I didn't think he had anything interesting to do, really.
But he's annoying. Didn't you find him
annoying, but not in
the character, in terms of, like, Baby has a plan at one point, and there's a scene where you just know he's going to get in the way, and he's going to come and ruin it, and he completely does that. And it's like, that was his role. His role is he's got his eye on Baby the whole time. And while the others are kind of like, they know him. And in the final heist, it's if he wasn't there, if Bates wasn't there, then...
Yeah.
I don't know.
Then I think it would have gone smoothly.
Like, first time around, I found Bats a bit annoying.
Oh, Bats. Bates.
Norman Bates.
Bates, mates.
Bats a bit annoying, and Spacey, like, a bit plain. This time around, I actually, like, they kind of leveled out for me, because I think Spacey's really having a...
Oh, I like Spacey.
Great,
he's having fun.
He's having so much fun.
There's a particular bit where he's drawing a map on a chalkboard, which is really
I feel like
fantastic.
That was improvised. Yeah. I don't know if that was in the script, because it just feels... It's such a lovely
I
moment.
Hope so.
And also, I felt like I would say that if I did that.
Yeah.
And I can imagine...
I can't draw with chalk. I can't draw with chalk.
I imagine
that was
Edgar
a great
Wright.
Line, and I think I would have said it too.
No.
I think I'm definitely as good as Kevin Spacey.
Not going to respond. It felt like a genuine line. It felt so real. It felt like it was just completely off the cuff. And if it was in the script, then amazing. But it didn't feel that way.
Yeah. So, I'll talk about something that happens towards the end of the film, but something happens that makes me, like, not love Kevin Spacey's character as much as I did towards the beginning. But we'll get into that in the spoiler section. I think overall a good cast, a good supporting cast.
Yeah, I think it was maybe filmed before he got a bit bigger, but John Bernthal doesn't get much
time.
That's
weird.
It's a shame.
I sort of forgot about him. After,
But I think that's more realistic in terms of the point is they constantly swap the crews for and that's way more interesting, I think, to have sort of a rolling cast of people.
Yeah.
All right, so we will be getting into the third act stuff in our spoiler section towards the end of the podcast. But before we do that, let's quickly talk about Netflix's Okja. So written and directed by Bong Joon-ho.
And John Ronson.
And John Ronson.
Writer on it.
Thank you. Who did The Host and the amazing yet underrated Snowpiercer. This Okja is about a sort of alternate future, I guess, where...
It's not in the future.
Yeah,
it's not set in the future.
Now.
Okay, so a company has genetically created a giant super pig, and one of these giant super pigs is the titular Okja, who is taken from her owners in... It doesn't say, but we assume it's Korea, isn't it?
It is Korea.
Yeah.
It's from her owners in Korea to be made into meat, but there is lots of stuff going on to try and stop that from happening, including... an animal rights group led by Paul Dano. So what do we think of Okja?
Completely loved it. I know we don't have long to talk about it, but Paul Dano was such a highlight for me. He's fantastic. He has some of the best lines. I didn't realise John Ronson wrote it until afterwards. When I found out, it made complete sense to me. Someone who spent all his time sort of analysing human interaction has made such a wonderfully human film that really gets into kind of good and evil and our decisions and our responsibility for those decisions without ever being boring or too heavy.
Yeah.
No, go on.
No, I was going to say it then, and it's like that good and evil, but also there's a lot of grey and there's a lot of futility about it.
Yeah.
And like, it's kind of, it's deceptive in that like initially there's a lot of bits that you feel like on face value are happy, but the more and more you think about it, the more you realize that there's a lot of bleakness in it.
Totally.
Yeah, I think it opens and you think, oh, this is like, it opens like a kids'
Shrek.
Film. It's like, yeah. It's, but you do, and you feel so uplifted and you think, this is great fun. And even in sort of moments of peril or however early on, you're like, oh, this is just like, it just feels like an adventure, yeah. And it feels like a kids' film. And then it just stops being a kids' film and it haunts you,
yeah,
forever.
It gets pretty dark.
It gets really dark. Yeah. It's not a light film to watch.
It's kind
that's what I sort of warn, yeah, people about. Don't go in thinking it's going to be sort of light and fluffy.
It starts.
It's not.
You think it's going to, yeah, be like E.T.
Yeah.
Or My Neighbor Totoro or something, and then it's this very dark look at the meat industry, essentially.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's almost like seeing the two sides of Steven Spielberg as a director,
yeah,
happening at once. So
very
you've got,
yeah,
like the dark AI Spielberg, mm, along with, I don't know, Jurassic Park or E.T. or something.
Mm. There's some, the acting in it is superb as well.
Yeah.
I think everyone's really good, and that sort of light and shade that's needed from almost every character has a sort of darker moment. Bar the main performance, everyone sort of has slightly darker moments. So I think it's amazing that, and,
yeah,
the cast they put together is great.
The main girl is amazing.
So Tilda Swinton is the film's villain, essentially. We've got Paul Dano. The lead girl is, I apologise if I mispronounce this, Seo Hyun An. She's fantastic.
Yeah.
She's amazing.
Mm. Jake Gyllenhaal, as you've never seen Jake Gyllenhaal before.
Very funny.
Dr. Johnny.
He goes to about 11. He goes to 11 very early on.
There's a really good bit where he's riding a goat. It's like 2 seconds, but oh my gosh.
Oh, it's...
Yeah, really great film. So it's available on Netflix, but Harry, you think we should see it in the cinema, don't you?
I think definitely go see it on the big screen. I think what we haven't spoken about is the animation of the actual animals, and Okja in particular is just stunning. And to see it on a big screen and the landscapes, and because it's set over a few sort of different places, I think you can really sort of breathe it in at the cinema and really get the full impact on it that you might not get on a laptop or a television. Yeah. So yeah, if you can, do check it out on cinemas, because it's really worth it.
Yeah, Netflix, for their original products, which this is one of, they stipulate that if you're making something that's going to have their name on it, it has to be shot in 4K. So that's like being able to see that on the,
yeah,
big screen,
yeah, yeah,
is really rewarding.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's Okja, which is available now. Okay, so if you haven't seen Baby Driver, do go out and see it and then come back, because we're now going to spoil the film. I'll start with saying what I wasn't,
yeah,
sure about with the Kevin Spacey point.
Okay, yeah, go on.
Because he's set up as a very scary criminal who is willing to break babies' legs.
Yeah, he's very even-handed.
Incredibly threatening, incredibly scary, and he's willing to kill people. And then he kind of very quickly turns and seems to like Baby and protects him.
I think he always likes Baby.
Yeah, it's an empty threat. I don't think he would have done it. I think that's the point. I think you realise when he changes his mind, I could
like
have just said no.
None of it would have.
Yeah.
I think the debt that he actually owed was far smaller.
Yeah.
I think Baby's been overpaying. I think he's just a bit ignorant. But Spacey is just scary and uses that against Baby.
Okay.
But he does... He dies for Baby.
Yeah, that's what I was...
That's what,
yeah,
I couldn't...
I don't think he does it intentionally.
No, but...
He's just trying to sort it out.
But he's like, I'll hold off the police. You don't say, I'll hold off the police and then expect to live.
Yeah. Mm. It does seem like a self-sacrifice, which didn't quite ring true. I think it needed a bit more to build up their relationship if they wanted to have him really love Baby. Almost be like a father figure to him, which they didn't. I wasn't quite convinced about that.
But it does tie up the loose ends, and I think
it
really
does
important
its job,
thing.
Yeah.
It sort of ties everything up, and it means you sort of get the ending you want.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. I think because this time I found more silliness in Spacey, and that I actually thought of him as a bit of a lighter character than when I first saw it, where he was trying to be like a Tony Soprano or something. And this time with like the chalkboard scene and some of the line deliveries.
Four pairs of eyes, three pairs of ears.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah.
What a line that is.
I think he's actually funnier, and he was a bit lighter. And I thought, actually, I can see the heart in him a bit earlier on to pay off. And it was, again, like for me, the kind of last 10 minutes of the film I was a bit iffy on, and then this time it was fine.
I think it worked. I think it doesn't it sort of gives you the end you want.
Yeah.
Without it being completely unrealistic, without it being like this is stupid, and they don't get away, and that's the important thing.
I love that they don't get away.
If they get away, the film, you come out of the film going, but because you think they've got away and then they don't, that is perfect.
That he put the brakes on.
It's not quite a ride into the sunset.
Yeah.
But I love that you think that, and also the kind of touch that John Hamm goes to shoot him, but then shoots on either side of his ear. So I don't know if he is
playing his weakness.
Completely deaf.
I think he might be,
because he has sort of touches the speaker at the end, doesn't he?
Which is like a really kind of layered moment of kind of, he could have just shot him, or he could have injured him, or whatever. Think about Drive. There's lots of people being injured and stuff like that, and that is such a clever, sort of really simply a really clever, another use of showing how of a narrative plot using a gun.
Think of that as a torture as well.
Yeah,
like, so saying, well, you shoot someone in the leg, they're going to heal.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
you deafen someone.
Someone who loves music.
Yeah. It's really horrible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, I didn't want to find out his name, and that annoyed me.
Yeah, Miles. I don't like his name.
I was hoping it would be,
oh, I can't believe your real name is Baby.
Thought it was going to be that.
Yeah, that would have been nice.
Also, I was hoping that it would just cut, and it would be like, I still can't believe it when we got to the courtroom and they read out your name and your name was, and then it kicks in with like Baby Driver, and then you're like, I quite like endings like that.
I can't believe that that's your name, and then just some weird response from him, just like, I know, it's German.
Yeah.
Like, what the hell? What is it?
It's way better not to know.
Yeah.
It's a letdown.
I kind of get what they're trying to do with Miles. But I don't think it doesn't quite pay off.
Yeah.
It's not worth giving it up for.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also really like the foot chase at the end as well.
Oh, the foot chase is phenomenal. So that's as good as any other car chase.
Oh, yeah.
But maybe better.
My only issue with that is, and obviously you sort of just accept it, but I'm like, he spent, so far we've seen him in the film, he only walks to get coffee and drives. How the hell is he athletic enough to do what must be a 2-mile run around chasing away from police? I mean, I'm not saying this film's far-fetched, but come on, guys. Come Edgar on, Wright. How's he doing that?
Edgar Wright, it was a hack. Yeah. Edgar wrong.
No, that scene is well played with Edgar Wrong. That scene is amazing, and I think you're bang on, Jake, about it being as good as any car chase.
Yeah.
It's so good. Like, just the way that he almost treats Baby as just another car at that point. Mm. The way that he bounces and moves, and he's just finding these micro structures to play these giant set pieces off of, even if it's just a tree or a bench.
Although it feels huge.
It does set it up slightly by the fact he does move like that anyway, as in he's always looking for another option in terms of when he ducks under pipes or whatever early on. So I guess it does set it up to a certain extent.
Yeah, and as we mentioned, this is a film that really is rewarding for multiple viewings.
Yep.
So I've only seen it once, but I definitely can't wait to see it again.
Yeah, it's like you're salivating for certain moments. Where there's a bit where the song that's playing, the lyrics sync up with the graffiti.
Yeah, that's incredible.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And so I was like, oh, it's happening, it's going to happen. He's starting to get the coffee. And here it is. It's just so nice.
Yeah, you didn't need to make that noise though when we were watching it.
Sorry, everyone.
Okay, so
can we quickly mention the old man he lives with? Is it Joe?
Joe. Oh,
we didn't mention me. He's absolutely wonderful.
Yeah. What a creation.
Yeah, spread it to the edge. That's all I need to say.
Spread it to the edge. Yeah, that's a nice touch. But Baby Driver is not the only thing you can watch this week, as there are many things available on Curzon Home Cinema, such as...
Drive.
Yes.
With Ryan Gosling. Also, one of the best soundtracks in a film ever. Great storyline. Love the end. The end is so good. Everyone should watch it.
I have the soundtrack on vinyl, and it is pink.
Oh, someone's a walking cliche.
Yeah, I know.
There's also a collection called Great Soundtracks. Which, if Baby Driver does end up on Curzon Home Cinema, and I'm sure it will end up in this collection. But on there, you've got Chirac, Tangerine, Sicario, The Duke of Burgundy, Radio On, Dead Man, Suspiria, Barbarian Sound Studio, A Field in England, This Must Be the Place, Ghost World, 20,000 Days on Earth, Requiem for a Dream, Spider, Lights in the Dusk, Oh Joy, huge collection, loads of great films, loads of great soundtracks. And this and Baby Driver will definitely give you a taste of wanting to get one of
them. The music in Chirac's amazing. Sorry, just to pick out one.
Yeah. All right, so thank you very much for listening to us this week. That is goodbye from Jake.
Goodbye.
Goodbye from Harry.
Goodbye.
Goodbye from Helen.
Goodbye.
Thank you to CSR for letting us use their studio once again.
Bye.
And we will see you next week.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.